Whelan Presley and Van Hall Funeral Homes have been serving Quad City families and veterans for over 100 years. Whelan Presley is located in Rock Island, Milan, Reynolds, and Van Hall in East Moline, proudly supporting WQPT. Alternatives is a proud supporter of WQPT and has been serving our community for 40 years. Alternatives provides professional guidance to maintain independence and quality of life for older adults and adults with disabilities.
Illinois is reaching the halfway point of the 2024 legislative session, and Illinois voters are poised to take a stand as well in the cities. This Tuesday is primary election day across Illinois. On Tuesday, March 19th, voters will cast their ballots for president. No big surprise there. But Republicans have two candidates that are running in the 17th congressional district, and some state house and senate races have primary challenges as well. Voting comes as Illinois lawmakers near the halfway point of the legislative session, and state Democratic Representative Greg Johnson joined us to talk about politics, legislative priorities, and a bipartisan measure he introduced that better protects people who work in prisons. Let's talk about the Illinois primary. It comes late enough that it really doesn't have an impact on national politics, particularly this year.
Yeah, I think 88% of our races this year in Illinois, there's not a challenger, I think, across the state. I think it's the highest in the last 20 years. I think primaries are a good opportunity for people to meet their candidates. I think you get two chances. You get your primary, you get your general. You know, as you know, I came out of a very contested primary election a couple years ago with two great candidates, and people got a chance to meet all three of us and see just really, you know, what our plans were and what we were about. And I think we're all, even though I'm in this position, we're all continuing to do great work. I would like to see our primary move to maybe Super Tuesday. It does feel like every time we get to our Illinois primary, the nominees are already decided, in particular in a presidential election year. So it is a little disappointing. I'd like to see us move closer to that.
Because there's always been a jockeying for position, of course, and there has been a big talk that if it's not Iowa, should it not be an industrial and rural Midwestern state? And I guess what always disqualifies Illinois is that it's such a blue state.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at Illinois, you look at the makeup of our legislature, you look at the makeup of our state, I think we are an incredibly diverse state as opposed to the state of Iowa. I think Illinois, I would argue that Illinois represents most of America much more than the Iowa population does when it comes to these elections. So I think Illinois should play every bit as a big a part in the process as the state of Iowa does.
Do you feel that there's going to be a move in the next 3 years to make that so, or is that pretty much, I mean, it's such a political beast, but because it involves a primary rather than a caucus, it does become, you know, a governmental issue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not hearing a lot of urgency over the issue, but I think we saw things move very quickly when it came to the state of Iowa and the Democratic Party a couple years ago. You know, I think legislation and politics sometimes move at a snail's pace, but when you really are incentivized to get something done, you can move things along pretty quick. So I think it's something, if there's an appetite to do, I think you could move pretty fast, sure.
Let's talk about this session right now and the big issue right now, of course, in the last weeks, because you're almost at the halfway point of the legislative session, is always the budget.
Sure.
Particularly in April and May is when the budget becomes an issue. A $52.7 billion spending plan that's been introduced by the governor. Major hikes in corporate taxes as well as sports betting. Let's start there. When you're talking about taxation, is that a place where you would like to see an increase?
I don't think anybody ever wants to see tax increases. And I also would like, sometimes when I hear people talk about tax breaks sunsetting for corporations, that's a tax hike. And I don't honestly consider that a tax hike. It's just a sunsetting of a tax break. You know, now, in a perfect world, nobody's taxed. But we have some essential needs that we need to look out for. We need to make sure that we're funding education at all levels. We need to make sure that we're funding our mental health crisis. We need to make sure that we're funding infrastructure. We need to make sure that all of our citizens are provided for here in Illinois. And you know, sometimes when you have to get that money, you have to get it from those that can afford to pay the most. And I think here in Illinois, you know, first of all, this budget is a proposal. It's got to go through a whole lot of channels and a lot of discussions between now and the end of May. But I think if you have to get it somewhere, that's where you're going to have to go.
One of the areas that the governor was looking for a tax cut, so to speak, was the grocery tax, that one penny tax. Is that pretty much a way of going after Republicans and saying, look, we are doing actual tax cutting here? I mean, is that more for show than for reality?
I think when you look at the grocery tax, first, it was eliminated, I think, for a year or two during the pandemic.
Yes.
And then it came back. And when the governor announced he was removing the grocery tax during his budget address, every Republican, every Democrat on the floor got up and cheered because, you know, they heard the word tax cut. I'm a lot of, you know, Rock Island, Moline, East Moline, Ball, I've heard from them. They've asked it. It's going to be a significant cut in revenue for them.
That's the big issue. Because it's about a $90 million collection, but it really does hit local government the most.
It does. I think, Jim, my main concern with the elimination. Now, the governor's take is that, you know, the reality is since the local governments benefit from the grocery tax initiative, they certainly have the ability to once again vote in a grocery tax with their local constituents, and that, you know, this gives them the part of that. I would argue that for a non-home rule community, I don't think that applies. I think it'd have to be a referendum. So I think there's an issue with that. I also just think that, you know, when you consider the fact that most states budget from January to December, state budgets from July 1st to June 30th, some states have already budgeted in that grocery tax. It's going to create some shortfalls. So if indeed the governor is dead set on eliminating the grocery tax, when would this apply? Would it start on January 1st? I think government has to be prepared for that. But, you know, the conversations are going to continue. I have heard my mayors in the district loud and clear on this. And I think we've got a lot of questions that are going to have to be answered about it moving forward.
Because my understanding is with the grocery tax, I mean, it's an easy one for the state to cut because they're not the ones that are getting the revenue.
Correct.
I think that's what you really have to underline.
Yeah.
Is that it does fall on the municipalities.
It does. And I just really, I don't want to make this, for me, this is an economic issue. I do not want my states having a shortfall of funding. I think they're all doing a great job. You see a lot of growth in our Illinois side over here in Rock Island County. I don't want to see that come to a screeching halt because they're losing the revenue.
On the other hand, this is a very regressive tax. This really
it
does
very
hit the
is.
Poorest as much as the most affluent.
It does. It's across the board. So as I said earlier, there'll be a lot of discussions about just where we're going to go from here.
I think people would underline the fact that we're going to have a $422 million surplus in the state of Illinois. That was the projection. On the other hand, in the coming year, some projections have it up to $891 million deficit. So whatever money that looks like a giant amount of money you have now, next year, you're going to have to budget for that. Is that a big concern for you?
The GOMI predictions are really, Jim, I've been in state government for I worked for 30 plus years. And I learned about halfway through my career that when I see these projections, they're always pessimistic. And they all, it seems like nearly every year, they underestimate the revenue that's going to come in. So I remember my first session last year in April when they gave us a $2 billion shortfall they talked about. And everybody, it felt like the sky was falling in that room because we had dealt with a couple pretty good surpluses that were coming in. And it turns out that they were way off base. So until I actually see where the revenue comes in, I'm very pessimistic about there. We have to just budget from year to year and just see where everything falls.
Well, I think the projections for this year have been off by like 0.2% to the benefit. About 0.2% more money is coming in, which is really minuscule, but it does kind of point out that at least in the short term, it's right on the money.
Well, I guess we're going to have to, yeah, we'll have to see. I am very skeptical of their estimate. I always am, always have been.
Talk to me also about Smart Start Illinois, the $250 million that's really geared toward childhood education and even child care. And there's been money that's come into the Rock Island, Western Illinois area. That's been kind of a game changer for you?
It has been. You know, Jim, education, it is the most important thing to me. It really is. You know, I think going back to 2017, the state of Illinois had done a very, very poor job of funding education. And the richest districts, there was such a gap between our richer and our poorer districts. And then the evidence-based funding came in 2018. And every single year, we continue to reinvest in the evidence-based funding. And I just think that's huge. And then last year, when we rolled out the Smart Start, once again, it just put another brick in the foundation that we're trying to build here in Illinois for education. That along with the MAP grants, you know, I don't think any student has gone that's wanted to go to school here in Illinois has been denied a MAP grant the past couple years. We had 3 years under Bruce Rauner in which students were fleeing the state in droves. We had a serious brain drain because they're going elsewhere. The Smart Start is just another example of where our priorities lie here in Illinois.
Well, and we're seeing a bit of an enrollment stabilization at Western Illinois University. I mean, is that what you attribute that to?
I attribute it to the fact that Illinois, if you're looking at the state of Illinois and you want your kids to get a quality education, that Illinois is willing to start educating kids from even before kindergarten to get them to reach their fullest potential. And isn't that really all of our job, not just legislators, but as parents, as grandparents, to make sure that all of our kids here in Illinois have the opportunity to reach their fullest potential? And Smart Start is another example. You know, the ability to also put more people to work, to teach them job skills, to get them in advanced manufacturing and so many other jobs while we're providing affordable child care for them as well. Because we can't bring people into our region to take jobs if we're creating jobs if we also don't have affordable child care options for them as well.
Would you like to see, moving totally to a different topic, the governor's been talking a lot about abortion rights in other states, but not necessarily making major legislation on abortion rights in Illinois. Is that something that you want to see in this session, or is that probably too late right now?
I think right now we've got our agenda set out. You know, I think a lot of people need to understand that the abortion issue doesn't, you know, the Dobbs decision did not just impact women's health care decisions, but also impacted our LGBT community and so many others. I don't think we're going to see a constitutional amendment on abortion. I do think we passed four significant pieces of legislation last year, one which, of course, I spoke on the floor about. Obviously, the issue is profoundly personal for me. I don't think I'd be here had my life not shook out the way it has. But it's a pretty heavy burden, heavy price. But I think that Illinois is going to continue to be a safe place for women to come. And when I see what's going on in states like Iowa and Texas and Missouri, I think Illinois has a responsibility to make sure that we become a safe place for women. Does that become a constitutional amendment for abortion? I don't see that on the horizon this year. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of momentum for that. I think they already know we're here for them.
I want to talk about an issue that's close to you, and that is the Department of Corrections. You want the creation of an Office of Workplace Safety, talking about issues that hit very close to home. And both Representative McCombie, the minority leader, is signing off on this as well, so you have bipartisan support. Tell me about this bill, and do you think it's going to actually make it through the legislature?
I do believe it's going to make it through the legislature. You know, you know, the Department of Corrections in Illinois is it's an organization. You know, I worked for 32 years in the department. And the reality is, while I appreciate my three-plus decades in the department, there were many times when the department really felt like they didn't have to comply at times with the rules of society when it came to OSHA standards. Saw a lot of situations. Yes, the state is supposed to mirror federal OSHA standards, but the reality is in these facilities, it hasn't happened. And on this one particular day, it didn't happen. There were trees that had been taken down by the derecho a few years ago. The state decided to go on the cheap, did not accept any of the bids for the work. We had a couple maintenance craftsmen. One refused. My good friend Chris James did not. He was the type of guy who would just wanted to get things done. He got on a lift that was, they ordered a 60-foot lift. They got a 40-foot lift. One without a safety harness from another facility that never should have been transferred from one facility to another. And ultimately, under the direction of the chief engineer and others, he was thrown from the lift and he died. You know, Chris was a friend of mine. He was my treasure. And it is very, very personal for me what happened to Chris. It never should have happened, but it did happen. And my job is to make sure it doesn't happen again. And I understand that the department now is following these standards. They are. but I can't trust them to not turn around once again without a state law on the books and start cutting corners again. I just can't. I know the culture. Nobody knows the culture in this legislature better than me. I've talked to Representative McCombie. She wholeheartedly jumped on this bill as well. She knew Chris. He was from her hometown of Savannah. This is a piece of legislation. Sometimes you need to support existing law with more law in order to make sure that they get the point. And I think they're going to get the point.
Our thanks to State Democratic Representative Greg Johnson of East Moline. Jason Carl says much of his music style is influenced on rock and folk as well as blues musicians, and his original material is written and performed with honesty and passion, he says. That's what Jason brought to the stage when he joined us at the Black Box Theater. Here's Jason Carl with Crazy Life.
Thinking you should and knowing you could, time to just write and you're feeling pretty good, but you're wondering if it would be alright with nothing to hide. It's easy to decide, just move on over and have a look inside, but you're wondering why your mind is so uptight. Spinning around in my chair, but I just can't get you over to my side. There ain't no rules in there. It's a box your brain is in. It's a picture painted in your mind. With nothing to lose but an old pair of shoes, you can run around world almost any way you choose, and as long as things improve, you're doing fine. Keep moving ahead, making some bread, saving up a little like your old man said, with a pillow underneath your head every night. And I'm spinning, there ain't no rules in there. It's a box your brain is in. It's a picture that's painted in your mind. No one will say what's going on today. The real world ain't real no more. It's standing in your way. I take experience over pain every time. You gotta take another look. It ain't written in a book. You can get anything you want. Just talk directly to the cook. And as long as all that took, sure flew by. And I'm spinning around my chair, but I just can't get you over to my side. Something wrong, and when you're living on the edge, it's a long, crazy life.
Jason Carl with Crazy Life. Circa 21 has a group of church ladies that are returning to the stage this month, but the Dinner Playhouse also is getting ready to welcome some tributes, those to Elvis, Neil Diamond, and Dolly Parton. And Circa's Denny Hitchcock joined us to talk about what's on the stage and still what's not so far behind. So your 2024 season is now underway, and of course you're starting off with the Church Basement Ladies through April 27th.
That's right. And my very dear friend Kurt Wallen, who had a theater in Minneapolis called the Plymouth Playhouse, was having a pretty rough time. He thought he might have to close the theater. And in the meantime, then he secured the rights to adapt a book called Growing Up Lutheran into a musical comedy. The ladies who had written the book said that he could do it. All the paperwork was done, but they had to oversee it. And he called and told me what he was going to do, and I told him that it wouldn't play, in my mind, outside of all of Minnesota or eastern North Dakota, South Dakota, northern Iowa, and
just
western Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And then he called me a few weeks later and said that things were going really well, and I said, no. He said, well, why don't you come up and see it? So my wife is half Norwegian. I'm half Norwegian. My mother is all Norwegian. We were born and raised in Minnesota.
Yeah, you've got the bond.
And the three of us then went to, my mother was there, my wife and I drove up, picked her up, went to see the show. The audience was going crazy. And my wife said, this won't play at our theater. And I called them the next day and hey, Kurt, thanks for the tickets. I still don't think it's gonna work for us.
Yeah.
Then about 6 months later, he called and said, well, we've had to add a second company. We're doing 10 to 12 performances a week, and we've sold more bus groups than the Minnesota Twins in a theater of 222. It said, send me a contract. So we did, and we had to add 18 performances for the show, the first 19, the first year we did it in 2008, I believe it was.
Why do you think it strikes such a chord? Because it does.
Because the women recognize the women. The women in the audience know those ladies on stage. The show really has nothing to do with any religion at all. It's just coincidental that it takes place in a Lutheran Norwegian church in Minnesota.
Which is so well known for lutefisk and casseroles, yeah, and those type of lunches and dinners.
Yeah, and let me give you a quick example of why it worked. We had three Jewish couples who always sat right in the middle. They were charter subscribers, and the gospel shows we had done, Marvin Anditch, who was sort of the leader of the group, I always talked to Marv after the show, and he would usually say something to the effect of, well, that's a great cast, they're really talented, and I don't care for the material. Same thing with shows that were Christmas, really Christmas
shows.
Understandably. He said the same thing. So I went to see him at intermission. I said, so Marv, what do you think? He said, I like it a lot. We've got all those broads in the temple too.
It's universal.
Everybody relates.
Yeah.
The women relate to it and the guys relate to it.
So that runs to the 27th. Your children's programs are also very, very popular. And you got Diary of a Wimpy Kid. You know, it's a book series that people absolutely love. That's starting May 18th. Tell me about the success of your children's theater.
Well, we started doing them in 1979, I believe, either 78 or 79.
Almost from the start.
Yeah, we were doing Camelot, and I had a friend who had written a children's musical called Young King Arthur.
Okay.
So the set, the costumes, everything worked.
Yeah.
And it did about 90% capacity, so that's what started our children's program, which now is three a year. We do one over the holidays. It's geared to kids through about junior high. And then in the spring, we do one that's geared to third, fourth, fifth graders, and usually an adaptation of a book that they're reading, hence Wimpy Kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the summer, something that's geared younger, and that always takes place usually in July, so no one's back to school yet. So that's how we program those shows. And Wimpy Kid, I think there's 19, 8 or 19 different books, and they've been popular for a long time. I remember going to my granddaughter's book fair at school. She has passed away, but she would have been 30 now. And grandson now, who's 8, same thing. There's all kinds of Wimpy Kids there. And he just finished one. He said, Grandpa, will you buy me another Wimpy Kids book? So we figure that the parents of the kids saw it the first, or were aware of the book.
Absolutely.
When they were in school, and he at 8 years old is aware of it because they're working with it in his school.
You also have a lot of musical performances. You've got the Letterman coming back.
The Letterman back for the 38th year.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we first booked them in about 1984, and there were two times when we didn't do it. One because they got a month-long gig in China, and the other was because of COVID.
And you also have a lot of the tribute bands. Let's see, you got Neil Diamond, a tribute performer, Elvis tribute, and Dolly Parton. That's really interesting.
And the Eagles in the same week.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah. Well, Brett didn't send it to you, that's why.
Oh, come on. Gotta work with this guy.
So this year, we're doing a concert week. So instead, I think it's the end of August.
It is, yes.
instead of extending one show a week longer or having the other one open a week earlier, we are doing, as you said, Dolly Parton, and our Dolly is Karen, I can't remember her last name now, but Karen was the winner of Jimmy Fallon's tribute act contest. She came in first as the best tribute artist or act in the country, not just Dolly, but everybody.
And I saw the Elvis guy on videotape.
Victor Trevino.
He's really good.
Victor's amazing. And he, too, has won many competitions with that. So we're thrilled to get them back. And then Seven Bridges, which is an Eagle tribute that's coming back for the fourth time, because every time they've been in, they sell out. So we have a week of tribute artists, the last week of August, prior to going into the Addams Family. So that would be too much for our production staff, so we're going to hire a technician to run those for us during that week.
Circa 21 and theater productions throughout the United States had such a tough time. You were shut down during the pandemic.
Yeah, we lost about 18 months.
And so did everyone else. And have you noticed that it's come back yet? I mean, are you back to pre-pandemic levels?
Not quite, but we're on the way.
Why do you think, because I don't think people are afraid of gathering anymore. Why do you think it's taking so long to make a full recovery?
Well, I think with motor coaches, they will often book up to a year, year and a half in advance. And as I mentioned earlier, with the first time we did it, we added 18 or 19 performances, and most all of those were motor coaches or church groups coming, maybe in a small bus. But it has a senior appeal, and our audience is a little bit older than say Playcrafters, and so sometimes people are just going to wait. And we've had some COVID cases this year, and so you know we're still cautious too.
Yeah, you've been in operation since I want to say 1977.
June of 77. Yeah.
Are you, even you a little surprised? I mean, the building's beautiful, the food is good, and the entertainment's excellent too.
Well, one of my partners, in fact, you may have worked with her at Channel 8, Julie McCard. Mm-hmm. Julie was a partner of mine for a few years, and we were talking with lunch one day, and she said, "Well, so what do you want to do next?" And I said, "Julie, you just invested in this project. Do you think I should be moving on to something now?" And I said, "I really have no idea." Then in about 1994, we had a really bad downturn. I wasn't sure we were going to be able to make it, so I sat down and started to do a resume. After about 15 minutes and half a page, because I hadn't done one since I was hired at Augie, I just decided, well, this is admitting failure. I can't do that. And put a lot of people out of work. So I threw it away and we stayed open.
And you're open today and tickets are available. You just go to the website.
But you know, Jim, I tell people, and I have another friend who felt the same way, that my background is strictly theater. And if I had known what I was doing, I would have closed years ago and several times over those years. Since I didn't, I didn't really understand, I think, how bad things were or could have been. So we kept going.
Circa 21's Denny Hitchcock. And once again, you could find out more about the productions and how you can book your seats by heading to circa21.com. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time as we talk about the issues on the cities.
Whelan Presley and Van Hull Funeral Homes have been serving Quad City families and veterans for over 100 years. Whelan Presley is located in Rock Island, Milan, Reynolds, and Van Hull in East Moline, proudly supporting WQPT. Alternatives is a proud supporter of WQPT and has been serving our community for 40 years. Alternatives provides professional guidance to maintain independence and quality of life for older adults and adults with disabilities.